Hi, welcome. I'm excited to talk about my research. So some background on the project that I'm a part of. I came onto this very cool project. It's an it's funded by an SCRI grant. It's called Tunnelberries. And it's a multi-state collaboration looking to address the most pressing grower questions in producing small fruit in high tunnels, or rather in protected culture. So it looks at structures, plastics, pest control systems, plastic recycling, just various things that people are really concerned about. And what I'm specifically dealing with is plastic and pest control. So high tunnel plastics have a lot of interesting qualities which sort of stem from the need to extend their life in the field. They have plastics, they have chemicals added to them to make them resistant to UV degradation. And what that ends up doing is altering the way UV light is transmitted into the plastic tunnel environment. And while that's a byproduct of extending the life of the plastic, it has been, those transmission qualities have been used to provide other benefits to the growing environment. So some of the ranges that are altered in commercial plastics include the UVB, UVA, visible, and infrared ranges of solar radiation. And I'm particularly interested in UVA blocking plastics. Those are the ones that block 400 nanometers and below, because they have been shown in the literature to decrease pests in greenhouses. So my question is partly, does this effect exist in high tunnels as well, and does it exist for raspberry pests? So we used five different plastics in our experiment, including an outside as well as an outside treatment. Two of these are experimental plastics that aren't commercially available. If you look at the Loom Clear and the Loom UV Block, those are nicknames that we gave two experimental plastics. They're identical in terms of their transmission of solar radiation, except for in the UVA range, where the Loom UV Block blocks about 93% of UVA, and Loom Clear blocks maybe around 30%. The pest that I'm looking at and that I'm going to talk about today is Japanese beetle. Of course, it's an invasive pest that we've had a very long time. It's polyphagous, so it's a pest on a lot of different crops, not just small fruit crops, but we're looking at its effect in raspberries. It's problematic because there's a pretty narrow range of insecticides that are used to control Japanese beetle. And at least in high tunnel production of raspberries, we really rely on beneficial insects and beneficial mites. So any spraying that we do can really upset that that relationship that really helps us handle our pests, as well as pollination. Primocane-bearing raspberries continuously flower, so they always need pollinators, and again, spraying can possibly impact them. So Japanese beetles are kind of interesting because their movement is really mediated by light intensity, and they tend to only fly on really bright sunny days and things like that. And that might possibly explain why over the course of the years that high tunnels have been used for small fruit production, it's been repeatedly observed that there are fewer Japanese beetles in high tunnels. But on top of just the fact that they seem to be reduced in high tunnels, we were curious if the UVA range and blocking proportions of it might further decrease Japanese beetles. Part of that is based off of the fact that studies looking at Japanese beetles in wind tunnel bioassays have found that they do have a degree of spectral sensitivity, so it's not just the amount of light in their environment that triggers them to fly or is required for them to fly, but also specific wavelengths of light may affect their behavior as well. So my thesis is that by using plastics that reduce UVA transmission, Japanese beetle accumulation and damage can be further decreased compared to standard high tunnel plastics. I'll go quickly through the design and methods. If you're curious, I can talk more about it afterwards. We have 18 research-sized high tunnels. They're blocked into three blocks. Each block contains the six plastic treatments. And each tunnel is a split pot with two cultivars, Josephine and Polka. For data collection in 2016, we collected Japanese beetles and counted them daily or every other day. And in 2017, we collected them every fifth day and counted them. So we analyzed the data through an ANOVA. In 2016, we analyzed the cumulative beetle counts at the end of the season, and what we found was that plastic was significant, but cultivar was not significant, and the plastic-cultivar interaction was not. And in 2017, we analyzed beetle counts on each individual date, as well as cumulatively at the end of the season. And here plastic was again significant. Cultivar was occasionally significant, and we did see a three-way interaction between plastic date and cultivar. So the really cool thing are the graphs. So what you see here is a graph of our plastics. It doesn't include the outside treatment because in 2016, the outside plants were getting seriously chewed up, and in order not to lose them, we had to move them into a high tunnel. But what you see is that there are significant differences between the mean cumulative beetle counts between the different plastics. And if you look at the percentage of UVA transmitted for each of those plastics, you can see that those means line up pretty well with the amount of UVA transmitted. You just keep in mind that Loom Clear there with 74% transmission is up there among the highest counts for the plastics, while Loom UV Block transmitting only 7% of UVA is the lowest. And in 2017, we saw the same trends, but in addition, we had an outside treatment. You might also notice that the y-axis goes up to much higher numbers. We had a lot more Japanese beetles in 2017 than we did in 2016. That might have been, you know, yearly fluctuations in populations, and it could also have been a result of the sampling technique. And the trends, the differences in the means are pretty much the same as they were in 2016, with the plastic blocking the most UVA having the lowest beetle counts. The only thing that's different is Kool-Aid Plus is up there and is not statistically different from Tufflate. And if you look at this again, Kool-Aid Plus should be a bit lower. It has lower UVA blocking, or it transmits less. So we did have a little bit of a difference there, which I'd be happy to talk more about. So some of the considerations I think that we can, and sort of implications of the results of this research, is just that a lot of growers are already using high tunnels to produce raspberries. So making a switch to a different type of plastic is not a huge revolutionary thing for them to do in order to control this pest. And those reductions were really significant. There were 75 to 94% fewer Japanese beetles under the Loom UV block than there were under Tufflate 4, which is the grower standard in our area. That's what most people have on their tunnels. Both of those were way better than outside, where we had significantly more Japanese beetles. So the question is, also, can other crops benefit from this? There are certainly some other crops that Japanese beetles feed on that can be, they are grown in high tunnels, for example, cherries. But some things that we would need to answer in looking into those crops would be, does the area covered by the high tunnel matter? A lot of those crops are grown in multi-bay tunnels, and even raspberries are grown in multi-bay tunnels in other areas. So really looking into that, the effect that area has. So I'm also doing research in spotted wing Drosophila. I'm not going to get into that today. I'll just say that I am doing another experiment that combines attractocidal spheres, harvest interval, and UV selective plastic. And I'm looking forward to getting data from that. But I'm really eager to answer your questions, and I'd like to acknowledge my advisors and the people working on my project, and also say that if you would like more information on this project in general, it's at tunnelberries.org, and hopefully this will appear there soon, too. So. Yeah. Sorry, can you repeat your question? In plant growth? Okay, the question was, did we see any difference in plant growth? So we didn't really see any difference in terms of vegetative growth between the plastics, but we did see some differences in yields, not in Josephine, which didn't have any differences between the different plastics. Polka, however, had an increase in, had significantly higher yields in Tough-Late 4, the grower standard, than any other of the plastics. And that was about 300 grams per plant over the course of the season. Higher. The question was, does it alter the nutritional content of the berries? That's not something that I'm looking at or that we've had a chance to look at yet, but there's certainly reason to suspect that it would. UVA and UVB are implicated in secondary compound formation. So. The question was, were the high tunnels kept open in terms of the sides and the end walls? So the end walls are fixed, but we do keep the sides rolled up, and that was actually part of why we were really curious to look at it, because look at the effect of UV in the high tunnels. They're not closed like a greenhouse would be, so there's certainly nothing stopping insects from moving in and out of the tunnels. So the question is, did we see any difference in temperature or microclimate in other ways? So we've had trouble getting good temperature data because our data loggers have been really problematic. But we do take foliage temperatures with an IR thermometer, and the temperatures are often all over the place. We haven't seen a huge amount of difference between the different types of plastics, including in Kool-Aid Plus, which is advertised as being a plastic that keeps the temperature cooler.
What about the cost of
The question was, what's the cost of the different plastics? Which is a great question, especially considering that two of them are not on the market. Tough-Lite 4, the grower standard, is certainly the cheapest plastic. It's probably around $4.50 to cover a high tunnel, and that doesn't include shipping costs. Kool-Aid Plus is also commercially available in our area, and it's more like $560, somewhere like that, for a tunnel. The problem is that the plastics that are not available for pickup in our area tend to have really high shipping costs, and that can really take a plastic that maybe is reasonably affordable and make it a little bit out of people's price range. Yeah. So the question is, did we use the same plastics in 2017 that we used in 2016? So yes, we did. We've been using these plastics. They are on their third year, I believe. So the question was, could there have been breakdown of the UV blocking or UV stabilizing compounds in the tunnels? So the cool thing about this is a lot of the data on transmission that we have, we just took this year. We got our own spectroradiometer, so we've been out taking lots of readings with it. So the transmission percentages that I have in this presentation are from this season. They're as recent as they could be. And we also did spectroradiometer readings before the plastics went on the tunnels. And they're pretty similar. Yeah.
All right. Joining in, thank you, Maria. Thanks.